Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast. In this episode, we talk about the Qplex Cryos Next Water Block and what you need to build your own DIY loop. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia. With me today, I have Darren McKay. Darren and I were trying to figure out what to talk about on this month's podcast, and I thought I would just come out and say, I have failed.
You failed to come up with something to talk about?
Well, there's a little bit of that, but I had actually failed on a water cooling project, and I thought that maybe through my failure, our listeners can learn a little something about the water cooling craft.
Okay, well, I am intrigued. Let's talk about how you failed, because that is definitely not very common.
So I was working on a project for Hackfort, which happens in March. It was a water cool project. It's a bit of a theme mod, and we're going to be including some cold and some fancy liquid and some water blocks and stuff. So I go out to Performance PCs, one of the premier places to buy water cooling gear. There's also Mod My Mods and a couple of other places. And I set out to buy a bunch of water cooling parts that I needed for this particular project.
Okay, so far so good.
I have all the parts out here on the table. And of course, since this is radio, everyone's going to be able to see everything. I figure we can talk about it. You don't necessarily need to know exactly what I have, but
maybe you'll learn something.
Yes. First off, I got a water block.
A water block. Oh.
And this one is from Aqua Computer. It is the
Qplex Cryos Next. Now, that's a mouthful.
It is a super mouthful, which is why I couldn't say it to begin with. But this is a solid brass water block with a copper base that's been nickel plated. It's pretty cool. It's a solid metal piece, which is something I need for this particular mod because I can't have metal and acrylic. Otherwise, it will break.
So this is one thing that we definitely should put a picture up, or at least a link, because this thing is really impressive. It's big, burly, businesslike. But what it doesn't look like is it's brass. Shouldn't the bottom surface be brass or copper?
The bottom piece is copper, but it's nickel plated. That's the hot new thing nowadays to make their water blocks look more,
shiny?
Classy.
Well, that part doesn't, well, I guess it doesn't really show, but I get that they're looking for aesthetics. Is there a performance loss, though, in having some sort of plating on your...
With the thin fin way of manufacturing water blocks now, there is a lot of surface area to the point where the coating doesn't impact the performance at all.
And the top of this is also then coated, and I know already that you can get this in a variety of different colors and styles, including a clear version, which would be similar to what I have in my PC.
Yeah, the clear one's the acrylic. This is it's kind of like a dark nickel, but it is more like an anodizing process over brass. And then they have the nickel plating, which is the chromish looking one. And then they also have a raw copper, which is kind of cool.
Now, I'm looking at the packaging on this particular unit, and I think that it might be worth mentioning because this is not normal, at least in my world, that this is a product that you can customize.
Yes, there is, three or four different versions of this water block that you can buy. The one I have is the base model, so to speak, but then you can also get it as a Vario, as a Vision, and what was the last one?
RGB, of course. Everybody has RGB, and one with a built-in temperature sensor, which seems useful.
Yeah, that's the Vision version. So,
So
the Vision version, so to speak, it has an LED temperature sensor with a probe that goes and plugs into your computer. So that way you can get power to it and see what's going on. And then with the Vario, there's a couple of screws at the bottom that allow you to move or change the angle of the jet impingement plate to direct the water in different parts of the block.
That's pretty slick, actually. Now, this is one of the more expensive and customizable blocks that we've seen. So what is the advantage of this style of block over some of the more standard styles? What are you getting for your extra money here?
I do not have a good answer for that, to be honest. The reason that I picked it was because I wanted to try something new, and they had multiple versions of this block. So I figured if I did a review of it and it did well, I might explore some of the other options as well. Because the Vario, for instance, allows you to tune the block. So in a sense, you'd be able to get better or worse performance based off of the other components in your water cooling loop.
Oh, very fancy. All right. I know this is just the tip of the iceberg, but this is a pretty impressive tip.
And then, of course, I bought some essentials, so to speak. So I bought some XSPC 90-degree rotaries. These are kind of cool in that when we built your mod with the thermal take fittings and the PETG tube, we had straight fittings. So everything was flat against whatever we were plugging into. So we had two straight fittings off of the CPU block, and then we had to create a 90 in the PETG to make it go into the block and then meet up with the radiator and stuff.
Now that makes sense. I can actually see the value behind these. I like the look of them too, because they have a really nice logo on them. And I'm guessing that you can get these in a variety of different finishes as well.
Yeah, I like the dark nickel myself. This is the, you know, the black chrome or whatever. The Terminator TX is where I got all that stuff from,
nice.
Right?
Nice.
These ones, XSPC makes them, they're very well made fittings. However, it's only on the junctions and the 90s and stuff like that. And then also the barbs that are really good. When it gets down to the actual fittings for the hoses and whatnot, they use a bit of an off size because it's a European brand.
Okay. Well, this is where we start to talk about where things went south. I get it.
Well, a little bit, yes. I was looking for a certain look for this particular build. And I was going back through some of the parts that I have for all my water cooling systems that I built over the years. And I'm going to show you two hoses here.
Okay.
Okay, so these are half-inch inside diameter tubes.
Fish tank tube.
Well, kind of fish tank. I want you to look at those two hoses. I'm showing Darren two hoses right now.
This one looks a lot thicker, actually.
Yeah, and one that does
stiffer.
Not. Yeah, and stiffer. So if you go and flex it, you should be able to create a certain radius before the hose kinks, right?
Right.
And one of them will, it's a bit more flexible, but it'll kink more. And the other one is less flexible, but, and won't kink.
Look, this one's got a phone number on it. We should give that out.
Yeah.
No, maybe not.
Well, the phone number is to the Tygon company. So you can get chemical information or whatever from them.
This one's also decidedly darker. Is this because we've used it?
Yeah, it's because we used it. A lot of the soft tube loops that I build in the garage, I just put regular tap water in, and that leaves a residue on the tubing. And this is basically the hard water from the city water here in Idaho.
All right, so talk to me about these two different tubes.
Okay, so the one with the phone number is a Tygon brand, and the one that is thicker is Musketeer, I think is the name. But the difference is they're both half-inch inside diameter. This is 3/8 outside diameter, which is the Musketeer. And this one, I thought, was the same. But it turns out it's 11/16 outside diameter.
Okay.
Tygon, they make a lot of different tubing. I'm not sure where I got this from. It might have been just given to me.
So what's the advantage, disadvantage here? I would think that more flexible would be a little easier to run the cable.
That was what I was after. So this 11/16 tubing, it's really flexible. I like it a lot, and it works great on the test bench. And with the radiuses that I need, they never kink. With this thicker stuff, it is equally as flexible, but it is also notably more difficult to run things on like a test bench or in a system because it wants to resort back to a flat or a nice natural curve state.
Okay.
So if you need to have a radiator right next to a water block, you're going to have this tight little bend, and it's just going to be pushing against itself all the time, and it's just a little bit annoying.
That makes sense. Now, we've been talking a little bit about fittings already, but are they compatible with the same fittings?
Well, yes and no. This is an XSPC barb, and these are our standard barb fittings that we use for everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
Plug that into the half-inch fitting, and then you got to put a hose clamp on there to hold it in place.
Right.
Right. You have another option, which is a compression fitting. And this is where the outside diameter of the tube comes into play.
Oh, I see. Yeah, because it needs to be able to get in there and be seated.
So if we go back to our PETG fittings from Thermaltake, we have to have a 16 millimeter outside diameter for it to fit in there and actually lock itself into place. And that was where we also got those slightly smaller O-rings and put them in our fittings so that the tubes would lock themselves down instead of being able to be pulled out easily.
You definitely don't want that to leak. So this thicker one I'm just looking at here is not really have much chance at all of getting inside of there.
No. And that is where my failure came to be. When you measure the outside diameter of both of these tubes that you can see, they're pretty darn close to 3/4. 11/16 is only a 16th of an inch difference. And that's over the entire outside diameter, right?
Right.
So when you measure them, it's like, well, they they both seem three quarter. And I was like, well, this is a Tygon tubing. So maybe what I'll do is I'll get the Tygon tubing, but I'll get thinner stuff. That is where my failure came in.
Oh no.
Right now, this is in plastic wrap. I'm going to open it up real quick.
So new and shiny.
And some people that know about water cooling will know what I did. They see the difference.
Yeah, there's nothing to it.
Yeah, so this is half inch inside diameter, 5/8 outside diameter, which ironically is the same size as our PETG tubing
so that we use
that's
in there.
That's the hard tube.
Oh, I can't make it work. No, I can't make it work.
Yeah. And since I knew that my tube that I wanted wasn't exactly 3/4, I was like, oh, well, maybe it's 5/8. So I ordered 5/8, half inch versus 5/8. And then I ordered some compression fittings that would fit that as well. So I got some fittings from Phobia, and these are compression fittings for soft tubing. And they work the same way as the hard tubing stuff. It's just that you have a barb and then your compression ring, which applies pressure to the top of the barb. And that's what holds it in place.
Okay.
It works great. It's like, I'm going to go and assemble this real quick. Basically, put the tube in there, put the compression ring on, and you lock it down, and lo and behold, it's there.
It looks amazing.
As you can see, the tube is basically flat almost all the time.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't hold the shape at all.
Yeah. So I'm like, that is not good. I didn't want the 3/4 outside diameter because it's really hard to run when you have it in a case and stuff, but I wanted something that was a bit more flexible. In the past, I've used 3/8 style tubing, and I've used 1/4 style tubing, and they're all great, but they restrict the inside diameter, so you don't get the same amount of flow. And the outside diameter of the tubing is what gives you the look when you're putting your build together. And you have these little tiny tubes that just, it seems like you're running an all-in-one. If you have the thick stuff, then it's like, oh, hey, this is all beefy, but you see where I'm going, right?
I do. It is obviously important to know what tube you're ordering. That seems to be the first lesson here.
Mm-hmm.
But how would you know?
Well, some of that is experience. I'm going to say it's experience. I have used this 5/8 outside diameter tubing before, and I had problems with it then. But at the time, I never remembered what size it was. I was looking at the inside diameter. Because when you were water cooling back, way back when, all you used was barbs. You didn't have compression fittings. So all that mattered was the inside diameter of the tubing.
Oh, yeah, I get that.
And if you got the thick stuff, sometimes you didn't need to have a hose clamp to run over your barb. And if you had the thin stuff, it was notably cheaper.
Dennis, I can't help but wonder, because we've got so much stuff here, and we're really looking at a pile of fittings here, and a pile of tubes now, too. So for the viewer at home, we have more water cooling stuff than you probably really need to build a PC, which makes me wonder if we could just kind of rough out in a standard build, how many of these things do you need? You know, if you were at home and you were building a punch list and you want to build just a simple water cooling, and let's just, to keep it really simple, let's assume that you're only going to use a GPU cooler and not a CPU cooler. Oh, no, let's do it the other way. Doesn't make sense. Let's do just a CPU cooler.
Just CPU.
I'm almost making it too simple that way. Okay, so obviously you need a block like that Qplex Cryos Next, although that's probably overkill for most folks.
For a basic water cooling loop, you need a block for the item you want to cool. That could be a GPU or a CPU. We're going to say CPU, so you need a CPU block. You need to make sure that the block itself is compatible with the processor that you are going to be using.
Now, that seems like the easy part. I'm still with you.
If you look on the top, there's two hose fittings or two spots for fittings.
Yeah, it's little screw holes. Okay.
Yeah, so each one of those is going to be a fitting, either going to be a hardline compression fitting, it's going to be a soft tube compression fitting, or it's going to be a barb fitting.
So I'm guessing because there's not one right answer, it probably doesn't come with them.
No, it does not come with
them. Okay.
Sometimes you can get lucky from performance PCs. They will sometimes say, hey, what fittings do you want to use with this CPU block that you just bought? Stuff like that.
Like for a dollar more, we'll throw them in or something like that.
Oh, it's a little bit more than a dollar. But,
oh, no.
But okay. Basically, that's what you're after.
All right, we'll get to that. I don't want to talk price yet. I want to get the punch list. Okay, so we got the cooler. We got two fittings.
Two fittings and the cooler.
Okay.
And then you have a radiator.
The radiator. We've talked that?
Yeah, we've talked radiators before. And the rule of thumb is that a single 120 millimeter, 25 millimeters thick radiator will dissipate about 250 watts of power.
Okay, so now you need to talk about power a little bit.
Yeah.
So how do you know how much power your PC is pursuing? I mean, this is not the same as the power that comes from your power supply.
No, it's not. The power is the TDP. So basically, if you go and look at a lot of 1150X Intel CPUs, they are around 120, sometimes 95 watts. And that is how much power is going to be dissipated when it's running at full load, full voltage.
So the threshold is 200, is that what you said?
It's 250 for the radiator.
250. So that means that for most standard processors, you could get away with a single 120?
Yep. That's why all-in-ones work so well.
Okay, now that's starting to ring a bell because they're not particularly fancy and certainly not at the level of this stuff.
Nope.
Okay, so we've got a radiator. We've
got a radiator.
And
with the radiator, you have a water in, water out. So you need two fittings. So now the total is four fittings.
Four fittings. Somewhere in there, we got two hoses, depending on which type of hose that you use.
Mm-hmm. And then you need your some way to pump.
A pump.
So you need a pump. And the best way to go is with a pump res combo.
Okay.
So I like the XSPC ones because they're relatively inexpensive. They're made from glass. They look great. And a lot of times they come with the D5 pump.
Okay. So we've got to get the pump connected to this thing. So
that's water in, water out.
So four more fittings, two on each end, right?
Two more fittings.
Why wouldn't it be four more fittings? And they're hose in and hose out?
Hose in, hose out are on the res. But since it's a pump res combo, the reservoir is connected to the pump.
Oh, no, I got you. Okay, so we've created a loop. Oh, suddenly it clicks. Water cooling loop is because it's a loop. How did I not think of that after all these years?
I don't know. It probably never came up. Okay. Now, of course, to your point, if you had a separate pump, like what we did a long, long time ago where you had pond pumps running in your loop, and you had a separate container as your reservoir, you needed to have four fittings for that entire system because the reservoir would be mounted somewhere in your system, probably in the top, and the pump would be at the bottom. So you need to be able to connect those. So you'll have four fittings. At that point, that's eight fittings for the entire loop. But if you go with the combo, which is what I would recommend, then you only need six.
Six? Three runs of tubing, one heat sink, one reservoir, which hopefully comes with a good fan that's at least 120.
And then at that point, you need to decide what you want to connect all of these things with. And I would probably recommend if it's a DIY loop, you would run half inch out or inside diameter if it is a hard lined system. So if you're going to be messing with PETG or acrylic tubing where you need to have the special tubes and then the bending kit and the whole nine yards there. But if you're going to go with soft tubing, I have found that the 7/8 inside diameter, 5/8 outside diameter gives you the same look as a hardline PETG system, but doesn't have the hose collapsing issue that I'm having with my half inch / 5/8 tubing that I'm showing Darren right now.
Okay. So I know we've talked quite a bit in previous podcasts about the process of putting together tubes, and we even cut some videos of the hardline process.
Uh-huh.
But I just want to, just in a nutshell, talk about the advantages of hardline versus soft tubing. What are they?
Well, with the hardline tubing, there's a lot of advantages, right? So you can route your tubes exactly where you want them to go. So if you want to have them all via parallel across your system, you can do that because the nature of them is that they don't flex. They're perfectly straight. They do not have a clouding problem. And we can talk about that in a second.
Oh, and that's why this one is not transparent anymore.
Right. Some of that is because of the clouding problem. So there's a chemical that's added to the PVC. They have to add a plasticizer to the tubing, and that's what makes it flexible. And the more plasticizer they add, the more flexible the tubing is. Until you get into kind of like a silicone rubber, which is really just a rubber hose, you know, and it's actually quite flexible and hurts if you hit somebody with it.
Probably not useful for water cooling because it would have the same collapsing issue as this tube.
It depends on the wall thickness, but yes, this Tygon tubing is plasticizer free because it has a different chemical in it. But the plasticizer leaches out of the hoses and will cause everything to become cloudy, the entire loop, the CPU block and everything. So every 6 months or so, you probably need to flush the system, and that will get some of the plasticizer out of it, but eventually you'll have to replace the hoses completely.
Okay.
These ones are cloudy, the ones that I have in front of Darren right now, partially because of the plasticizer and partially because I've just used straight tap water, which is inherently dangerous because there's a lot of minerals and stuff that just come out of the tap.
So I just had a thought. I know how challenging it is to bend hard tubing. We've got a couple pieces of it here. We've, again, talked about this quite a bit before, but it just kind of clicked to me that instead of this lovely elbow piece here that is so difficult to do right with a bending kit, which is pretty expensive, why wouldn't you just do a few more of these little elbows and just have a bunch of 90-degree bends to get where you're going?
That is a very good question, and it really comes down to cost. This fitting that you were just holding right now, which is the XSPC 90-degree rotary, it has a G-quarter screw fitting on one end, and then it has a female G-quarter on the other end that you would attach a fitting to. So I'll go and screw a barb in there, and there you go. This fitting alone is like $5. When you have these 90s, the one thing that we did in your build when we had a PETG 90 was we had two depths or two lengths that we had to deal with. We had the length from the bend to like the radiator, for instance, and then you had the depth from the bend to the CPU block. And that is something where it's like, okay, well, we're just going to bend it here because that's close, and then I'll measure how far this needs to go back so that it makes contact with the CPU block.
Right.
If you have these 90s, you can't do that same depth measurement because now all of a sudden you have to add another fitting to the G quarter to space it out, you know, 5, 10, 15, whatever millimeters. And you can use fittings kind of like these other ones here. These are slide fittings. And this is, again, radio, but there's basically, think of it as a barrel with two G quarter threads on each side, and the thing slides apart so that you can adjust the spacing.
Sort of like a middle version of an accordion bend of something, only in this case it's just a compression fitting. I see. Yeah, easier to say than to visualize, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So you have to make room for these fittings.
Yeah, so I could put this slide fitting onto our 90, and then I could slide this back and forth, and that would give me the depth away from the CPU block to meet the hose that needs to go directly across into the radiator in your system.
Yeah, but adding more hardware doesn't always look as clean, so I'm starting to see now the advantages of not using them.
Well, and if you can get these to have the same finish, like I have these dark nickel ones, and these are kind of black chrome, right? You can get extensions that are the same, and they have the same knurled ends on them and whatnot. And at that point, they look pretty good, except that you have this big chunk of metal that's coming off of your CPU block that might be elegant and acrylic, and then a clear tube. So from that standpoint, yes, it does look a little weird.
Okay, so I think I've got the basic idea here, but, and I know we don't normally like to talk price, but I think it's worth kind of roughing out what it would cost to build this super simplified system. I mean, just ballpark, because prices, of course, change over time, but let's talk it out, and maybe not with these exact parts, but just to give people a general idea. So starting with a water block, what's a good range of what a good water block would cost?
You are going to be close to $150 to $200 for a good water block.
Okay, now that's a pretty good range. And we're talking brands like this one that we've talked about from Aqua Computer. I know EK has one, Thermaltake has one. I mean, we have a lot of options. And so I'm guessing the range is based on you know, how fancy do you want it to be and whether you're adding all those extras.
Right. And the extra cost comes in with the way that the water is routed through the block, the complexities of creating the cold plate because of that thin matrix that is on the EKs and even this Aqua Tuning one and the heat killer that I like so much. It costs a lot to build those, and they fail a lot, which is why the cost is a little bit higher.
So I'm guessing, though, that for the average user, even an enthusiast, the step up even to the entry-level water block is probably going to be enough.
Exactly. I mean, even some of the water blocks you can get from Thermaltake, like we had one that was, it was really badly designed, but it worked really well for how bad it was.
So we've got the water block. Now, I'm gonna come back to hoses and fittings, but let's talk about the big pieces. So a radiator, a 120 radiator with a good fan, you know, reputable. We're not talking about a generic one off the market that might have corrosion issues or quality issues, but what's a good entry-level radiator? What's the range on that?
I prefer the black ice ones myself, and for a standard 120, you can get them for less than $100.
Not bad. So we're locking 250-ish already. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's talk about the pump res combo. Now, you mentioned the thermal tank, and I know that they are on the more affordable side of the combo units.
Well, yeah, you would think. Thermaltake is one of the more expensive brands, to believe it or not.
Oh, wow. Okay.
For at least the combo, like the one that's in your machine, is close to $300.
Holy cow. Okay. So what's a good entry level one cost?
That's iffy. So you can go onto eBay and get like a D5 that has a tube cylinder reservoir on there for probably $150.
Now, is D5 a brand or is that a size?
The D5 is the type of the pump.
Oh, okay.
And it's a Lange brand. Believe it or not, that those pumps are used in RVs. So when you are pumping water from your tank to go and wash your hands, it's usually from a D5 pump.
All right, so D5, give me a price. What's my entry?
If you want to get a good pump res combo with a D5 pump, it's going to be close to $350.
$350, so 4 or 5. So we're looking over 6 already. Mm-hmm. All right, so now we know we need some tube, and I'm guessing the tube is probably the cheapest part of the build. That seems to make sense. So enough tube that I can screw it up once or twice.
Yeah, that is the tubing is around $3 a foot.
That's not bad.
And if you got 6 feet of tubing, then you would still have enough for a standard build. And if you screwed up, there's a little extra.
All right, so what, less than $20? That's hardly enough to really count. But now let's talk about the fittings. Now, you have a lot of different fittings here, but if we went with just the basics here, now assuming flexible tube or bending tube, so you don't have to take into account the equipment. So six right. fittings.
Six fittings for flexible tubing. They range between $3, $3.50, give or take, all the way up to about $7 to $8, depending on the manufacturer and the finish. Because you can get some of them from like Monsoon, for instance, that have carbon fiber wrap around the middle.
Fancy. But I'm guessing if you're doing a relatively basic build, you're probably somewhere in the middle. So call it, I don't know, $30. So
yeah. Well, for instance, these ones are from Phobia, and they have a 1/2 inch inside diameter, and they fit the 5/8 outside diameter. So I bought the right fittings for the tubing that I bought that I failed on. However, it's just the tubing is collapsible. And these ones, $4.
Yeah, that's not too bad. And they look nice. Okay. We're still looking maybe $650-ish.
Mm-hmm. For a DIY loop.
For a relatively basic DIY loop, which leads me to one other question, and that would be, what would we recommend adding to that? Because, I mean, you can clearly have a basic loop, but there got to be a few essential add-ons that you would recommend.
With any DIY loop, you need to have a way of draining it. That was something that we talked about in previous podcasts where we have fluid that sits in your loop for about 6 months to a year, and then you should probably change it just to make sure that any metal that it has separated itself from your fittings, your blocks, and to get into the loop to make it conductive, gets flushed out. Also with the soft tube, with the plasticizer and whatnot, you just kind of give it a flush every once in a while. The easy way to do a flush is to, with soft tube, just separate the hose, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But that kind of makes a mess. So if you got a T-fitting, like this one right here, this is an XSPC and it has a threaded end on one side, a threaded end on the other side, and then a threaded end 90 degrees of those two. So it looks like a T. That you can put in between on your hose loop. You need a couple more fittings to make it work, but then you can put a ball valve at the T end, and then that would allow you to just turn the valve and it drains all the liquid out.
That's a lot of, I don't know, a lot of efficiency you'd gain from maybe $15-$20.
The ball valve is about $7. The T fitting is about $3. And then, of course, you need a fitting for that on each side. So you need to add a couple more compression fittings for the T, and then you need one to connect it to the ball valve and then a cap. So that's an extra $20 to $30 right there. But that gives you a lot of flexibility in how you drain the loop and not make a big mess.
Okay. Well, what about some of these other crazy things I see, like temperature probes and electronic monitoring and that sort of stuff? Any of that we'd recommend, or is that all just kind of just fancy?
Anything beyond what we've already mentioned in this podcast is just kind of fancy additions. You don't have to have them, but they're kind of nice. Like, for instance, we put a spinner in your system so that we could see the fluid moving through. And that allowed us to say, hey, it's not spinning as fast. There must be something wrong, like the block got plugged up one time. The temperature sensor in the loop is also beneficial in that it allows you to monitor the coolant temperature itself. So it lets you know if your fans are working efficiently, if your radiator's gotten plugged up, and of course, you know, cooler temperatures in the loop mean cooler temperatures on your components.
Now, I know that you can go with a basic distilled water, for example, but most places sell fancy liquids. Is it worth the extra stretch to get a different fancy liquid? I know we've tried several here in the shop.
Right. So coolants are, they're all water-based. So in terms of cooling capacity for the fluid, it's all going to be basically the same. You can get opaque fluids that allow you to just not see through them. You can get clear fluids like what we put in the C1000. For instance, speaking of the C1000, it has a bit of glycol in it. The important thing with the glycol is that it prevents corrosion with mixed metals.
Now, that sounds like that's worth a little bit of stretch there as well.
Some of the other fluids that we've looked at, they've added metals to the liquid. Instead of actually leaching metal out of your loop, it already has it in there. It makes it incompatible in loops that have mixed metals like an aluminum radiator and a copper water block.
We've had a lot of things to think about if you're looking at moving into a water cooling system. And I can see now why so many people prefer a DIY, because it's just nice to have all those decisions made for you. But there are now some really great kits that are out there that will get you all those basics that we've discussed, from Thermaltake and Ice Bear, and I'm sure there are dozens more that we're looking at. But don't be intimidated. I think the water cooling setups are definitely cool. They're very efficient. Do you gain, you think, enough to be worth the $650 in a standard build?
No, not really. If you want to go water cooling and you're just cooling a CPU, you might as well go all in one, because there's a lot of the loops out there, the Asetecs and whatnot, they are super efficient. As the name suggests, they're all in one, so you don't have to worry about filling the fluids. The fluids are good forever. The hoses are already connected, so you don't have to worry about leaks. The only maintenance you need to do is make sure that the radiator doesn't have any dust in it. But with a DIY loop, of course, you get a few more performance enhancements because you can move more fluid through. You can tune the cooling a little bit better by adding different fans and larger radiators. And it does look cooler in terms of a custom PC. So if you want to have that one step up, DIY is the way to go. For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2019. Thanks for listening.
It's just freaking messing with me.
It is.
It's like the truth is out there. If you could just play this backwards, it would tell us how to overclock the 9900.